We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Nicole Byer, helping you make those rooms flyer. Today's style tip, when it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild! Like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Ooh, fierce! This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
This is an ad by Regain Couples Therapy and features real testimonials.
This was our first time trying therapy, and honestly, it was long overdue. Looking back, we just wish we had started sooner.
Regain's qualified therapists help couples when they can't get there on their own.
We thought it was intimacy issues, but Andrea helped us uncover a deeper root cause we hadn't even realized was there.
Visit regain.com/couplespod to get 10% off your first month. Regain, powered by BetterHelp.
Coverage varies by plan. View contracts and exclusions at endurancewarranty.com.
If you're driving a car or truck with an expired warranty and suddenly lost your transmission or needed a full engine repair, would a $4,000 repair bill leave you stranded? I'm Danica Patrick. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Choose the company I trust. Endurance. No matter the mileage, if your vehicle is less than 20 years old, Endurance offers comprehensive auto protection plans for any budget. Protection on the drivetrain, electrical, transmission, AC, and more. Plus, benefits like 24/7 roadside assistance and rental car reimbursement on any plan. Endurance handles everything from making the claim through the repair process to paying the certified mechanic of your choice. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Act now and get one full year of elite benefits, a $2,000 value, free.
Visit endurancewarranty.com for your fast free quote today. That's endurancewarranty.com.
Story one. I've worked at the same jail for over 6 years now. My job as the mental health therapist has given me the chance to see things from a unique perspective, one that not only involves diagnosing mental illnesses, but also dealing with the darkest corners of the human mind. But what I've encountered in that place, something I still can't explain, goes beyond the realm of diagnosis. It was an event I'll never forget. It was late one evening, the kind of still, quiet night where the walls of the building seemed to hold secrets. A heavy silence had settled over the cell block as I walked the hall, my footsteps echoing off the concrete walls. The fluorescent lights above buzzed faintly, casting long shadows that stretched unnaturally along the floor. There wasn't a sound except for the occasional murmurs of an inmate from the cells. I'd seen enough strange things working in that jail, but I'd never witnessed anything like what happened that night. I had just left the last cell of a particularly difficult session with one of the inmates. He was a quiet man, mostly withdrawn, but something in his eyes had been different that day, like he was waiting for something. I remember walking past his cell and hearing him say something under his breath, though it was too faint to make out. It didn't seem important at the time. I turned the corner, heading back toward the guard station. That's when it happened. I'd been walking for a few minutes when I noticed something in the corner of my eye, a shift in the shadows. I wasn't one to jump at every little thing, especially not in a place like this. It was dark. The lighting was poor, but something didn't sit right. I looked over to my left, and that's when I saw it. It was only a flash at first, just a brief silhouette in the dim hallway. At first, I thought it was a trick of the light, the kind of optical illusion you get when your eyes are tired or when your mind starts playing games on you. But when I looked closer, the figure didn't move like a person. It was wrong. It was tall, unnaturally tall, its outline blurred, like the shadows themselves had taken shape. There was no real definition to it, just a swirling, dark mass of nothing that hovered just outside the reach of the light. The thing didn't have a face, but I could feel its presence. I could feel it watching me. I froze. A chill spread down my spine, and for a moment I couldn't move. My breath caught in my throat as the shadow seemed to sway, like it was breathing in rhythm with me. I knew with an eerie certainty that I wasn't alone in that hallway anymore. And then from behind me, I heard it, the unmistakable sound of footsteps, slow, deliberate, but not mine. I whipped around, my heart pounding, but the hallway behind me was empty. There was no one there. I quickly turned back to where I had seen the shadow, but it was gone. Just like that. vanished into thin air. My skin crawled and I didn't know what to think. My rational mind screamed that it had to be some kind of hallucination, a trick of the light or exhaustion. But deep down, I knew it wasn't. Something had been there, something I couldn't explain. I couldn't shake the feeling that it was still there, watching from the darkness, waiting. My stomach twisted with unease as I moved quickly down the hallway, my eyes darting from side to side, half expecting to see the shape again. When I reached the guard station, I found two of the guards, Dave and Rachel, sitting together. Their faces were drawn, tired. Dave looked up as I entered, his eyes wide with unease. "You okay?" he asked, his voice tight, like he was trying to hide something. I nodded, trying to shake off the sense of dread that still clung to me. "Yeah, just, you know, the usual." I tried to smile, but it felt wrong. It didn't reach my eyes. Rachel looked over at me, her expression hard. She didn't seem surprised, just concerned. "You saw it too, didn't you?" she asked quietly. I blinked, unsure what she meant. "Saw what?" "The shadow," Rachel said, her voice barely a whisper. "The one that walks the halls. We've all seen it." Dave nodded, his face pale. "More than once. I thought it was just me, but Rachel's seen it too. I think it's been here for years." I stared at them, my heart skipping a beat. "Wait, you've seen it?" Rachel's eyes were wide now, the fear in them unmistakable. "It's not just the inmates. It's not just people who are mentally ill. I've seen it. Dave's seen it. Hell, even the new guys talk about it. It's been here for as long as I've worked here." My mind raced as I processed their words. The shadow wasn't just something I had imagined. It was real. And it wasn't just me. It was something that everyone had seen. It was the same thing every time, described in almost identical terms. Tall, dark, featureless. Moving in and out of the shadows like it belonged there. I felt a cold sweat break out on my skin as I realized what they were saying. "Do you know what it is?" I whispered. Dave's eyes flickered to the door, as if checking to make sure no one else was listening. "I don't know, but I think it's something that's been here longer than the jail. Something darker." I had to leave. I couldn't stay there any longer, not with the knowledge that something was lurking in those halls, watching us. It wasn't just the inmates who were haunted, it was all of us. I don't know what that thing was, but I do know one thing. I'm not the only one who's seen it, and I'm not sure what would happen if we ever did. To this day, I can't explain what I saw. Was it a trick of the light? A manifestation of the human mind in a place full of fear and despair? Or was it something real, something that had been there long before the walls of the jail were even built? I'll never know, but I do know this. I won't be walking those halls alone again. Story 2. I never thought I'd be the kind of person to believe in anything supernatural. I've always been practical, grounded, a skeptic at heart. But what happened to me during that scout camp in 1990? It shook that belief to its core. Let me start from the beginning. My dad served in the Royal Air Force, and for years our family was stationed at RAF bases all over. In 1990, we were at a place that used to be a Luftwaffe fighter base during World War II. It wasn't the kind of place you'd think of for a camp, especially with the history it had. There was a farm there during the war, and I'd heard the stories from my dad. Russian POWs were forced to work the land, and at least four of them died. They had headstones somewhere near the old farm, marked with faded names and dates, but the base had moved on from all of that. It was occupied by the RAF, part of the British Forces Germany contingent, now just another military post. Then, for some reason, someone in charge thought the old farm would make the perfect location for a scout camp. And that's where I found myself, 12 years old, bright-eyed and ready for whatever adventure awaited me. Little did I know, I was about to experience something that would leave me questioning everything. The camp itself was uneventful during the day. The usual scout activities, campfires, games, singing songs, telling stories. But by the time the sun dipped below the horizon, something shifted in the air. It wasn't the cold or the dark. It was more like an oppressive weight hanging in the silence. We were all settled into our tents for the night, but sleep never came easy. I was in a tent with another scout, Jamie. We'd been friends for a while, but that night we could barely talk. There was this strange sense that something wasn't quite right. The sounds around the camp seemed too sharp, too pronounced. Every rustling of the trees, every distant shout, felt like it was louder than it should have been. But the worst part came around midnight. I just started to doze off when I heard something. At first, it was so faint I thought I might have imagined it. A low thud, like something heavy falling to the ground. Then it came again, this time louder. And then, in the stillness of the night, I heard a scraping sound, like someone was digging. I froze. My heart slammed against my chest, and my breath caught in my throat. It was close, too close. "Jamie," I whispered, trying to keep my voice steady. "Do you hear that?" Jamie shifted in his sleeping bag, groaning. "Yeah, what the hell is that?" The sound grew louder, unmistakable now. The sharp scrape of a shovel against earth, followed by the muffled sound of footsteps. It was as if someone was out there digging. I couldn't make sense of it. This was a scout camp, right? Nothing sinister ever happened around here. Or so we thought. I glanced at Jamie. His eyes were wide and he looked as freaked out as I felt. We both knew we had to check it out. If it was just some of the camp staff messing with us, we could call them out. But something told me this wasn't a prank. We didn't say anything more. Without a word, we unzipped the flap of the tent just enough to peek outside. The air was colder than it had been earlier, and a mist was starting to creep over the ground. The shadows in the trees looked longer, more menacing than they should have. But the worst part? The digging noises. They didn't stop. They were coming from the direction of the old farm, right where those four Russian POWs were buried.
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Nicole Byer, helping you make those rooms flyer. Today's style tip, when it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild! Like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Ooh, fierce! This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Coverage varies by plan. View contracts and exclusions at endurancewarranty.com.
If you're driving a car or truck with an expired warranty and suddenly lost your transmission or needed a full engine repair, would a $4,000 repair bill leave you stranded? I'm Danica Patrick. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Choose the company I trust. Endurance. No matter the mileage, if your vehicle is less than 20 years old, Endurance offers comprehensive auto protection plans for any budget. Protection on the drivetrain, electrical, transmission, AC, and more. Plus, benefits like 24/7 roadside assistance and rental car reimbursement on any plan. Endurance handles everything from making the claim through the repair process to paying the certified mechanic of your choice. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Act now and get one full year of elite benefits, a $2,000 value, free.
Visit endurancewarranty.com for your fast free quote today. That's endurancewarranty.com.
I held my breath as I cautiously pushed the flap open wider. My eyes scanned the area in the pale moonlight, but there was nothing. Not a single person. No one moving. No one digging. But the sounds continued. "I don't get it," Jamie whispered. "Where is it coming from?" I swallowed hard. The tension in the air was suffocating, and I could feel my pulse pounding in my throat. Maybe we should go see." Jamie didn't answer, but I could see he was thinking the same thing. Slowly, we both slipped out of the tent, moving as quietly as possible. The ground was damp beneath my boots, the mud sucking at my shoes with every step. We walked toward the source of the noise, our footsteps muffled by the eerie quiet surrounding us. As we drew closer to the farm, the digging noise seemed to grow louder, as if the earth itself was groaning under the weight of something. When we reached the edge of the farm, I stopped dead. My stomach churned. There in the distance, through the mist, I saw figures. They were moving, hunched over, shadowy shapes bent over the ground. I could barely make them out, but I could tell they weren't ordinary people. Their movements were wrong. Too jerky, too unnatural, like they were caught between the living and the dead. I looked at Jamie, but he was as frozen as I was, his eyes wide in terror. We couldn't look away. The shadows moved around the graves, digging, as if they were trying to pull something from the earth. And then, the noise stopped. The figures paused, their heads tilting as if they could feel our presence. The silence was deafening. I wanted to scream, to run, but my legs wouldn't move. I was paralyzed, caught in the grip of fear. And then, just as suddenly as it had started, the figures vanished. They were gone, like they'd never been there at all. Did you see that? Jamie finally whispered, his voice shaking. I didn't know how to respond. My mind was racing, trying to process what we had just witnessed. There was no way those were just people. No way they were just some prank. I knew what I saw, and I knew it wasn't right. We didn't stick around any longer. Without a word, we bolted back to our tent, hearts pounding, and crawled inside. We didn't sleep. Not that night. Not for the rest of the camp. I've never forgotten that night. The sounds, the shadows, those figures. Whatever they were, they didn't belong. They were something else, something I couldn't explain. And I'll never be able to shake the feeling that there's something still buried there. Story 3. I still can't explain what happened to me during my time working the midnight shift at the state prison. It was one of those places where the air always felt thick, like something was just waiting to happen. I had been a corrections officer for about a year when this stuff started. It was a routine night, as usual. I'd just finished my rounds and was making my way through the maze of concrete hallways, checking on the cells. It was around 200. The place was as quiet as a tomb. The inmates were all supposed to be in their bunks, lights out, but you know how it goes. Some of them never really sleep. As I walked past one particular cell, I noticed something strange. I stopped. The cell was normally empty, except for the occasional inmate doing time on a minimum security charge. But tonight, there was someone standing in front of the back wall of the cell, just staring at it. I squinted. The guy was tall, hard to miss, even in the dim light that filtered through the bars. His back was to me, his arms at his sides. It didn't make sense. The guy should have been in bed. I knew the cell. I knew the prisoners assigned to it. So I stepped back, my boots clicking softly against the cold concrete floor, trying to get a better look. But when I looked again, there was no one there. I froze just for a second. The hair on the back of my neck stood up. The cell was empty, just like that. I scanned the room, the shadows, everything. But it was empty. I checked the corners, the tiny space beneath the cot. Nothing. I radioed my partner, a guy named Hawkins. Hey, 23-7, check cell 10C. I think someone's up. Might be a security breach. Hawkins didn't respond right away, which made my pulse quicken. It wasn't like him to ignore a call. I tried again. Hawkins, you copy? Finally, his voice crackled through the radio. Yeah, 23-7, copy. You sure about this? 10C is empty. I don't know what I saw, Hawkins, but you need to check it out. I'm standing outside, not going in. I don't know what compelled me to say that, but as I stood there, my gaze locked on the empty cell again. I felt it. Something was wrong. Something I couldn't explain. It was like the whole place had gone dead, every sound muffled and far away. A coldness filled the hallway, even though the air conditioning had been running all day. Hawkins came over the radio. All right, stand by. He was slow to move. Too slow. After a few minutes, Hawkins finally called back. Cell's clear, man. You're losing it. His chuckle echoed faintly, but something in his voice sounded off. What did you see exactly? I'm telling you, Hawkins, the guy was standing right there, back to me, staring at the wall, and then he wasn't. There was silence on the other end, just for a second. I don't know, man, but we both know some of these places are haunted. I laughed it off, but I didn't feel much like laughing. There was something about it, something I couldn't shake. I tried to push it out of my mind, continuing my rounds. The rest of the night dragged on like it always did. But deep down, I kept feeling like eyes were on me, like I wasn't alone, even though I was. Around 0300, I was back at the officer station, watching the security cameras. Nothing unusual, just the usual low buzz of the fluorescent lights and the soft hum of the ventilation system. The camera on the far wall caught my eye. It was showing one of the cells on the second floor, one of the high security ones. I was staring at the screen when something caught my attention, an inmate standing at the front of his cell. He was looking right at the camera. I blinked. He was staring right at me, like he knew I was watching. I turned my head to the hallway, checking the area. I was alone and the cell was just a few doors down. No one was in front of it. I looked back at the camera. The inmate was still there, standing at the bars, looking directly into the lens. His face was pale, almost sickly. His eyes were wide, intense, as if they were locked on me, trying to communicate something. My heart hammered in my chest. What the hell was going on? I turned to my partner. Hawkins was sitting across the room, flipping through some paperwork. "Hey, look at the camera," I said, my voice low, almost trembling. Hawkins glanced up. "What? The one in 8A? "Yeah," he shrugged. "Nothing's there, man." I looked back at the screen. The cell was empty. The inmate was gone. "What the hell?" I muttered. I ran a hand over my face. He was just standing there. Hawkins didn't say anything for a second. "You sure? Maybe your eyes are playing tricks on you." "No, man, I saw him. He was staring right at me." I wasn't sure if I was more confused or scared at that point, but I knew what I'd seen. I turned back to the camera. The cell was still empty, but now my pulse was racing. Something felt off. "All right, I'm heading out," Hawkins said, grabbing his jacket. "You good?" I nodded, trying to act normal. "Yeah, just a weird night, that's all." But when Hawkins left and I was alone in that dimly lit room, I couldn't shake the feeling that something was wrong. The silence, the shadows, the way everything felt like it was waiting for something to happen. The walls seemed to close in a little more with every passing minute. I never saw that inmate again. I never saw anything like it. But I still think about it. Late at night, when I'm alone and the house is too quiet, I can still feel the weight of those eyes on me. Watching, waiting. And no matter how much I tell myself it was just a trick of the light, part of me knows better. Some things you don't forget. Story 4. I don't know if you've ever worked in a prison long enough to get used to the strange things that happen, but after a while, the stories and the whispers start to feel like they're rooted in something real. I used to be a corrections officer at a state prison in the Southeast. You hear things about places like that. Hell, you live it. You know it's not just the inmates who are messed up in there. The place itself has a weight to it, something you can't shake, no matter how many times you walk those cold, sterile halls. But I didn't believe in any of that supernatural stuff at first. I wasn't a big believer in ghosts, spirits, or anything of the sort. I was just doing my job, trying to stay under the radar. The thing is, after enough time there, it starts to make you question what's really going on. I remember one night, it was a standard shift, me doing my rounds, checking the units. There's always a certain quiet to the place when the inmates are locked down. You get used to the silence, the hum of the lights, and the sound of your boots echoing off the concrete floors. But there's one unit, one in particular, that never sat right with me. It was a segregated unit, high-risk inmates, the kind that don't really fit anywhere else. That night, it was eerily quiet in there. I was doing my rounds, flashlight cutting through the darkness, the beam bouncing off the cold walls. I checked the cells. Everything was normal. But as I reached the end of the hall, I froze. There was a strange chill, like the temperature had dropped 20 degrees in a second. A cold that crawled up my spine and gripped my chest, making it hard to breathe. I was standing there trying to shake off the feeling when I heard it. A soft sound at first, barely a whisper. "Mommy." My heart skipped a beat. It was a child's voice. But I knew there weren't any children in the unit. Hell, there weren't any women either. And the last thing I needed was to go around calling for someone who might be messing with me. But I didn't move. I stood still, trying to make sense of it, when the voice came again, louder this time, desperate. "Mommy!" It sounded like it was coming from the far end of the unit, but there was nothing there. Just the steel bars and concrete walls. I walked toward it, every step feeling heavier, my boots dragging against the cold floor. When I turned the corner, the air was thick with that same icy chill, and my breath came out in visible clouds. I checked every cell. No one was there. But the voice, I couldn't shake it. I started to leave, but as I turned my back, I felt it. That sensation, like someone was standing just behind me, breathing down my neck. I whirled around, but again, there was nothing. Just the echo of my own heartbeat in my ears. That's when I heard the door slam. Loud. So loud it echoed through the entire unit. My instincts kicked in, and I rushed back to the front of the unit, my hand on my radio, ready to call for backup. But there was no reason to. The unit was still locked down. Nothing was supposed to be moving in there. Still, I couldn't shake the feeling that something was watching me. The next night, it was worse. I had to check the same unit again, and the air felt wrong. I could barely take a breath without feeling like I was suffocating. That cold was back, even worse than before. And the shadows, they moved. They always did. Out of the corner of your eye, you'd see them darting across the room, quick flashes of movement, like someone or something was walking just out of sight. But it wasn't just the shadows that got to me. It was the way the inmates spoke about it. The female unit was on the other side of the prison, and the inmates there, they didn't talk much to the male officers, but they had their own stories. Stories of something walking the pod when the guards were gone. They didn't call it a ghost. They didn't even call it a spirit. They just said something was there, watching. One of the older women in the pod, I can't remember her name now, looked at me one night after I had done my rounds. She was sitting in her cell, watching me through the bars, and her voice was a whisper, like she was afraid someone might overhear. "You feel it, don't you?" she asked. "Feel what?" I said, trying to keep it casual, but my heart was racing. "That thing that walks around, when the guard's gone, it don't make a sound, but you can feel it, can't you?" I didn't know what to say. I just nodded and walked away, my mind spinning. I thought about it all night. The next shift, I found myself back in that damn segregated unit. Everything was normal, but the air was heavy, like it was pressing down on me. And that's when it happened. The door slammed again, but this time I was standing right in front of it. I knew there was no one on the other side. I took a step back, my heart pounding, and then I saw it. It was just a flash at first, but it was there. A figure just beyond the bars. A shadow. Not just a shape, but something solid, something with weight. It moved quickly, out of sight, and I could hear the scrape of boots across the floor. Faint, but real. I didn't wait. I bolted out of there, straight to the control room, my hands shaking as I punched in the numbers to lock the unit down. Later, I heard the stories. One of the inmates had committed suicide in that same unit years before. They said it was a brutal scene, the kind that stays with you, even after you leave. Some said it wasn't the first time someone had died there. But the thing is, I couldn't find any record of it. No paperwork, no explanation. And to this day, I don't know what I saw. I don't know what I felt. But I know this. The place had something in it. Something that didn't belong. Story 5, it was late, way past midnight, and I was alone in the infirmary. The usual hum of fluorescent lights filled the room, mixing with the occasional distant sound of doors clanging shut. The kind of noise that would echo through the old walls of the county jail. I had worked overnights there for years, so I was used to the eerie quiet that settled in when the place went still. Still, there was always something unsettling about the quiet. I don't know if it was the weight of the darkness or the knowledge that I was surrounded by people who would never see daylight again, but something always felt wrong. I had just finished checking in on a few inmates when I heard it, a soft rattle from down the hall, a metallic scrape that sent a chill up my spine. I froze, staring into the dim corridor that stretched before me. The sound came again, a faint dragging, then a distinct click. It sounded like a door opening, but it couldn't have been. I knew the doors in this place. They only opened with keys, and the only person with those keys at this hour was the sergeant on duty, who was nowhere near the infirmary. It had to be the wind, or some trick of sound, but I couldn't shake the feeling that something was off. I shook it off and went back to organizing some medical supplies, trying to convince myself it was just another one of those weird noises that echoed through the old building. But then it happened again. This time it wasn't just a sound, it was a presence. A cold breeze seemed to flow through the hallway, but the windows were sealed tight. I stood up, my pulse quickening. The hairs on the back of my neck prickled as I walked toward the door, listening for any sign of movement. The floor creaked beneath my feet, the sound too loud in the silence of the night. That's when I saw it, the stethoscope. It was lying on the floor just outside the infirmary door. I didn't even remember taking it off, let alone putting it on the ground. The strange part, I had been standing on the other side of the room, far from the door, and it wasn't like I dropped it, no. It was placed there, carefully, almost deliberately. I stepped forward, bending down to pick it up, and as I touched the cold rubber, I felt a chill run through my fingers. The hairs on my arms stood up. Something wasn't right. Before I could even process what was happening, the door at the end of the hall slammed shut. So hard the wall shook. I froze, staring down the dim corridor. The building was old, but that was no ordinary slam. The sound was like a warning, like something was trying to get my attention. I don't know why I walked down there. Maybe it was the adrenaline. Maybe it was the nagging feeling that I had to know. But I found myself standing in front of that door, the one that had just slammed, my stethoscope still in my hand. It was an infirmary door, heavy, steel, and locked at all times. It was impossible for anyone to be on the other side, not without the keys. I reached for the doorknob, expecting it to be locked like it always was, but it wasn't. It was open. I should have walked away right then. I should have gone back to the infirmary, locked myself in, and called someone for help. But I didn't. Something drew me in, something I couldn't explain, like an invisible force pulling me closer. I stepped inside. The room was completely dark, the only light coming from the faint glow of emergency exit signs at the far end. I couldn't see a thing. It was like the shadows themselves had come alive, stretching and shifting in the corners of the room. I was barely able to make out the outline of the empty beds and medical equipment. It was just a room, nothing special. But then I heard it. A low guttural sound, almost like breathing, but far too slow, far too deep. I froze. The air grew thick, suffocating. My heart raced as I turned toward the sound. The breath grew louder, more pronounced, and with it came a pressure in the room, something I couldn't quite put my finger on, like the air itself was pushing against me. I backed up, my feet stumbling on the cold floor, the sound of my breath deafening in my ears. Then I saw it. It wasn't much. Just a shadow in the corner. Something darker than the surrounding darkness. But it was enough to send every ounce of blood rushing to my head. It was tall, unnaturally tall, and its shape was wrong. The edges of it blurred like smoke, twisting in a way that shouldn't have been possible. I couldn't make out any clear features. No eyes, no face. Just an overwhelming sense of dread that pressed in on me like a vice. I couldn't breathe. I couldn't move. It felt like the world had frozen, and all I could do was stare at that shape, watching as it seemed to grow larger, its presence consuming the room. Then it moved. It wasn't a step, not really. It was more like the air around it shifted, and the shadow seemed to glide toward me, its form stretching impossibly long, as if it was coming from all directions at once. I couldn't scream. I couldn't even blink. And just as it reached out for me, everything went black. I don't know how long I was out. Minutes? Hours? When I came to, I was back in the infirmary, sitting on the floor, my stethoscope still clutched in my hand. The door was shut, the room was silent, and the darkness had returned to its normal, suffocating stillness. But something had changed. I could feel it in my bones. The air was different, thick with a presence that I couldn't shake. I never told anyone what happened that night. How could I? No one would have believed me. I don't even know if I believe it myself, but I can still feel the weight of that shadow, lurking just out of sight. And the worst part? The next time I went to work, the same thing happened again. Only this time, the stethoscope was gone before I even entered the infirmary. Story 6. I've seen my share of unsettling things in my career. I was a criminal prosecutor for over 15 years, working cases that would churn even the strongest stomach. I had stood toe-to-toe with murderers, rapists, and the worst humanity had to offer, and I prided myself on being unshakable. That changed one damp winter morning in the county jail. The jail was an old hulking building on the outskirts of town. It had stood for decades, its walls steeped in stories of violence and despair. Whenever I visited, a chill seemed to follow me through the corridors, but I chalked it up to the drafty construction. That day I was there to interview a man accused of a particularly grisly crime, details I'd rather not revisit. Let's just say his file had kept me awake more nights than I care to admit. The jailer led me to one of the interview rooms, a small windowless box with concrete walls and a single steel table bolted to the floor. "He'll be here in a few minutes," the jailer said gruffly before locking me inside. I heard his footsteps retreat down the hallway, leaving me alone. I sat down, flipping through the case file, trying to focus. But the silence was oppressive. I could hear the faint hum of fluorescent lights overhead and the occasional distant clatter of keys. My eyes kept drifting to the door, a solid metal slab with a small observation window. Then it happened. The door handle turned. Not a jiggle or a slip. It turned firmly, deliberately, as if someone on the other side was about to walk in. I froze, my breath catching in my throat. The door swung open, just wide enough for someone to step through. But there was no one there. I stared at the empty doorway, my heart pounding. For a moment, I thought maybe the jailer had returned, but the hallway beyond was empty. Just as slowly as it had opened, the door shut. The latch clicked softly into place. "Hello," I called out, my voice sounding weak in the stillness. No response. My stomach churned as I stood up, moving cautiously toward the door. I peered through the observation window, scanning the corridor. It stretched out in both directions, lit by flickering lights. It was completely deserted. I sat back down, trying to rationalize what I had just seen. Maybe there was a draft, or the old building's hinges were loose, but deep down I knew the truth. The handle had turned. Someone, or something, had opened that door. Minutes later, the jailer returned, the prisoner in tow. The man, a wiry figure with hollow eyes, was cuffed and shuffled to the chair across from me. The jailer stayed by the door, arms crossed, watching silently. Before I could begin the interview, I blurted out, Were you just here? A few minutes ago? The jailer frowned. Number Y. The door, I said, gesturing to it. It opened. By itself. The jailer's expression didn't change, but his eyes flicked to the prisoner, then back to me. That kind of stuff happens all the time, he said flatly. I blinked. What do you mean, all the time? He shrugged, his tone matter-of-fact. Doors opening and closing, shadows where there shouldn't be, voices when no one's around. This place is different. I stared at him, waiting for a smirk or some sign he was joking, but his face remained impassive. You get used to it, he added, like he was talking about a leaky faucet or a creaky floorboard. The prisoner, who had been silent until now, chuckled darkly. They're watching, he said, his voice low and gravelly. They always watch. My skin crawled. Who's watching? I asked, though I wasn't sure I wanted an answer. He grinned, revealing yellow teeth. The ones who never left. I tried to steer the conversation back to the case, but my focus was shot. Every creak of the walls, every faint sound from the hallway made my heart jump. I finished the interview as quickly as I could and practically bolted from the room. As I left the jail, the cold air outside felt like a blessing. But even now, years later, I can't shake the memory of that door, the way it opened and shut with no one there. I've never been back to that jail, and I don't plan to. Whatever's in there, it can stay there. Story 7. It was my second year working as a night shift officer at the prison. Everyone called me rookie, even though I was far from it, having spent 5 years in the Army before this. But something about working in corrections was different. The air felt heavy. The walls seemed to absorb and hold on to every scream, every fight, and every last breath. This place was alive in ways no one wanted to admit. The inmates would tell us stories sometimes, between shifts when they were feeling talkative. Shadow men, disembodied voices, doors slamming shut on their own. I brushed it off, like most people would. If you're locked up long enough, I figured, your mind starts to play tricks on you. And when you're sitting alone in a cell at 2 a.m., I imagine even the tiniest sound can grow into something monstrous. That was until I started working in A Block. A block was old. Built in the 1930s, it was the oldest part of the prison, long since condemned for inmate housing. It was used now for storage, mostly old records and broken equipment, but we still had to check it during our rounds. Protocol, they said. Every night we walked through the dimly lit hallways, our flashlights cutting through the shadows, the air stale and cold despite the summer heat outside. The night it happened started like any other. It was just after 3 a.m., the witching hour, as one of my colleagues liked to joke. I had just finished my rounds in B Block and was making my way to A Block. As I approached the door, the hair on the back of my neck stood on end. It felt colder than usual. I shook it off and pushed the door open, the hinges squealing loudly enough to make me wince. The hallway was pitch black. The overhead lights had gone out years ago, and no one had bothered to replace them. My flashlight beam wavered slightly as I stepped inside, the beam cutting through the darkness. The walls were lined with old cells, their iron bars rusted and broken in places. Most of the cell doors were open, swinging gently on their hinges. I told myself it was the draft. It was always the draft. Halfway down the hall, I stopped. Something didn't feel right. I turned off my flashlight just for a moment to see if my eyes could adjust to the dark. That's when I saw it. At first, I thought it was my reflection in the glass of one of the old cell windows, a tall, dark silhouette standing perfectly still. But then it moved. Slowly, deliberately, it stepped closer to the bars, and I realized it wasn't a reflection at all. "Hey!" I shouted, snapping my flashlight back on. The beam illuminated the cell, empty. My heart was pounding now, my pulse echoing in my ears. I scanned the hallway with the flashlight, trying to convince myself I hadn't just seen what I thought I had. Maybe it was a shadow, I reasoned. Maybe it was just my imagination. But then I heard it, a whisper, faint and raspy, like dry leaves brushing against each other. It came from the cell, the same one where I'd seen the figure. I stepped closer, my flashlight trembling in my grip. "Who's there?" I demanded, my voice barely steady. Silence. And then, all at once, the door slammed shut behind me. The sound echoed through the empty hallways, so loud it made me jump. I spun around, my flashlight beam dancing wildly. The door was closed, locked tight. I ran to it, yanking at the handle, but it wouldn't budge. "This isn't funny," I shouted, my voice cracking. I radioed for backup, but all I got was static. The whispering started again, louder this time, coming from all around me. It sounded like a dozen voices overlapping and muttering words I couldn't understand. My flashlight flickered, and I felt something brush against my shoulder, a cold, light touch that sent a jolt of terror through me. I spun around, swinging the flashlight like a weapon, but there was nothing there. The whispers grew louder, more insistent, until they weren't whispers anymore. They were screams, high-pitched, guttural screams that filled the hallway, bouncing off the walls. I covered my ears, dropping the flashlight, its beam spinning wildly on the floor. The shadows seemed to move, twisting and writhing like they were alive. And then it stopped. The silence was deafening, the air thick and still. My flashlight had rolled to a stop, its beam pointing at the far end of the hallway. There, standing just outside the circle of light, was the figure. It was tall and impossibly thin, its limbs too long, its head cocked at an unnatural angle. I couldn't see its face, but I knew it was looking at me. It took a step forward and I ran. I didn't think. I didn't look back. I just ran. I hit the door with my shoulder and this time it flew open. I stumbled out into the main corridor, gasping for breath, my heart hammering in my chest. The hallway was empty, the fluorescent lights flickering overhead. When the morning shift arrived, they found me sitting on the floor just outside A Block, my back against the wall. I must have looked like a madman. They asked me what happened, but I couldn't tell them. Not really. I just shook my head and said, "I'm done." I put in my resignation the next day. I haven't been back to that prison since. Story 8, I worked as a registered nurse on the midnight shift in a state prison in Michigan. Midnight shift in any facility has its own peculiar rhythm, and this place was no exception. The silence at night was different, heavier somehow, pressing down on the building like an unseen weight. It wasn't the quiet of rest, but of something holding its breath. Our clinic area was tucked away in a corner of the prison, a place that didn't get much traffic unless something serious happened. I knew every creak of those hallways, every clang of a closing door, every scuff of boots on the linoleum. Midnight was my time, and I had learned to read its language. One night, I was restocking supplies in the med room. The door to the room was slightly ajar, and from where I stood, I could see the hallway leading back to the nurse's station. That's when I saw her, another nurse, walking past the med room door. She was quick, her shadow stretching along the wall as she moved toward the station. "Hey," I called out, surprised. "I didn't know you were working tonight." I recognized her immediately. She had a distinct way of carrying herself, a confident stride that was hard to mistake. I stepped out of the med room expecting to catch up to her. The hallway was empty. I froze, my voice caught in my throat. I knew what I had seen. She had walked right past me. There was no way she could have rounded the corner that quickly. I checked the nurse's station, the break room, the small restroom nearby. No one. The clinic area was dead silent, except for the faint hum of the fluorescent lights. I returned to the med room, my heart pounding. Maybe I was tired. Midnight shifts could play tricks on your mind. I shook it off and went back to restocking. But that wasn't the last time. A few weeks later, I was working with two other nurses. Midnight shift was usually quiet, so we spent a lot of time chatting to keep ourselves awake. That's when we started hearing it. Footsteps in the hallway outside the clinic. At first, we thought it was a guard making his rounds. The sound was deliberate, a measured pace, accompanied by the faint jingle of keys or a belly chain. But when the footsteps came closer, they didn't sound like boots. It was lighter, almost like bare feet. "Is someone out there?" one of the nurses asked, her voice tinged with unease. "I'll check," I said, trying to sound braver than I felt. I stepped into the hallway expecting to see one of the officers. The hall stretched out empty in both directions. The footsteps had stopped the moment I opened the door. I walked the length of the corridor, even checked the locked doors to the exam rooms. Nothing. No one. "There's no one there," I said when I came back. The other nurses exchanged uneasy glances but didn't say anything. Midnight shift was full of unspoken agreements. If something didn't make sense, you just didn't talk about it. But we couldn't ignore it. The footsteps came back, night after night, sometimes close, sometimes faint, but always there. We started calling him Fred. It was easier to give him a name, to make him seem less real. One night I was alone in the clinic. My coworkers had gone to grab coffee, leaving me to finish up some charting. The footsteps started again, echoing down the hallway. This time, they didn't stop. They grew louder, closer, accompanied by the unmistakable jingle of keys. I froze at my desk, my eyes fixed on the doorway. "Hello," I called out, my voice trembling. The footsteps stopped just outside the door. I stared at the doorway, waiting for someone to step through. Seconds passed, each one stretching into an eternity. The silence was deafening. I felt a cold chill crawl up my spine, the kind of cold that seemed to seep into your bones. "Is someone there?" I asked, my voice barely above a whisper. The door creaked open, just an inch, as if someone was peeking in, my breath caught in my throat. Slowly, I stood up and approached the door, every nerve in my body screaming at me to stop. I reached out and pushed the door open. The hallway was empty, but the cold lingered, wrapping around me like a shroud. I backed away, my hands trembling. The sound of footsteps started again, this time receding down the hallway. I didn't follow. I couldn't. When my coworkers returned, I told them what had happened. They didn't laugh or brush it off. They just nodded, their faces pale. They had heard Fred too, maybe even seen him, but no one wanted to admit it. After that night, I couldn't shake the feeling that I was being watched. The clinic never felt empty, even when I was alone. The air was heavy, charged with something I couldn't explain. Fred wasn't just a name anymore. He was real, and he was always there. I left the midnight shift not long after that. I told myself it was because of the hours, the toll it was taking on my health. But deep down, I knew the truth. It wasn't the hours. It was Fred. And no matter how far I've gone, I can still hear those footsteps in my dreams. Story 9. I've seen my fair share of places most people wouldn't set foot in. Abandoned houses, decrepit hospitals, even a few dark forests with histories of tragedy. Places that others swear are haunted, but often turn out to be just echoes of empty spaces. But this was different. The invitation came from a friend of a friend, a paranormal investigator who'd heard about my nerves of steel and my knack for staying calm under pressure. The location was an abandoned prison, specifically the wing that had housed the criminally insane. The place had a reputation, whispers of shadows moving in the corners, disembodied screams, and an oppressive air that made even seasoned investigators hesitate. Naturally, I agreed to go. I had never been scared before, and I didn't think this would be any different. The night we arrived, the air was heavy, almost suffocating. The building loomed in the moonlight, its windows like dark, hollow eyes. The rusted gate creaked as we pushed it open, and the crunch of gravel underfoot echoed like gunshots in the stillness. There were four of us, me, Marcus, the lead investigator, Kelly, our tech expert, and Sam, who'd been to the prison before and acted as our guide. "This is the block," Sam said as we stood in front of a thick steel door marked criminally insane. His voice was steady, but his hand trembled slightly as he pushed the door open. The hinges groaned, and the smell of rust and mildew hit us immediately. The temperature dropped noticeably as we stepped inside. The hallway stretched before us, dimly lit by our flashlights. Empty cells lined either side, their bars covered in decades of grime. As we moved deeper, the atmosphere shifted. The air grew heavier, thicker, as if the walls themselves were closing in. And then it started. I can't explain it, but I felt it. Eyes, dozens of them, watching us from the darkness of the cells. My skin prickled, and I felt an icy dread crawl up my spine. I'm not one to get paranoid, but I found myself glancing over my shoulder more than once, expecting something. Nothing was there, just shadows. "Do you feel that?" Marcus whispered, his voice barely audible. We all nodded. Even Kelly, who was usually glued to her equipment, looked uneasy. "It's like they're all still here," she murmured. We continued down the hall, our footsteps echoing in the oppressive silence. Sam stopped in front of a cell near the end of the block. "This was his cell," he said quietly. "Whose?" I asked, though I wasn't sure I wanted to know. "Richard Haynes. They called him the Throat Ripper." Sam hesitated before continuing. "He killed two inmates, tore their throats out with his teeth. He spent the rest of his days here until he died, or whatever you want to call it." The cell was empty, but the energy around it was palpable. It felt like stepping into a pressure cooker. My chest tightened, and my breath came in short gasps. The others must have felt it too, because no one said a word. The silence was deafening, pressing in on us like a physical weight. Suddenly, there was a loud clang. It echoed down the hall, freezing us in place. Marcus swung his flashlight around, but the beam revealed nothing, just more empty cells. "What was that?" Kelly asked, her voice trembling. Her usual confidence was gone. "Probably just something falling," Marcus said, though he didn't sound convinced. We all knew nothing in this place had moved in decades. Then the air changed. It's hard to describe, but it felt alive. The oppressive energy around Haynes' cell seemed to grow, stretching out and wrapping around us like invisible tendrils. I couldn't move. My legs felt like lead, and my heart pounded in my chest. And then I heard it, a low, guttural growl. It came from the cell. We all heard it. Marcus dropped his flashlight, and the beam spun wildly across the floor. Kelly let out a small scream, and Sam backed up so quickly he nearly tripped over his own feet. "We need to leave," I said, my voice barely more than a whisper. My usual bravado was gone. Every instinct I had screamed at me to get out. "Did you see that?" Kelly's voice was high-pitched, on the verge of panic. She pointed towards the cell. "There was something there. It was watching us." I didn't look. I couldn't. All I could focus on was the growing weight in the air, the suffocating sense that whatever was here wasn't just watching us. It was feeding off our fear. "Go," Marcus said, his voice firm despite the terror in his eyes. "Now." We didn't argue. We turned and started back down the hallway, our movements quick but careful. No one wanted to run and risk falling, but the urge to flee was overwhelming. As we passed each cell, the feeling of being watched intensified. It was as if the entire block had come alive, the air humming with malevolence. When we finally burst through the steel door into the open air, it felt like we'd surfaced from drowning. We stood there, breathing heavily, trying to process what had just happened. No one spoke for a long time. "Never again," Sam finally said, breaking the silence. "I've been here before, but that was something else." I didn't respond. I couldn't. All I could think about was the feeling in that hallway, the oppressive energy around that cell, and the growl that still echoed in my mind. I'd faced plenty of strange things in my life, but this was the first time I'd felt true, bone-deep terror. We packed up our equipment and left without another word. I've never been back to that prison, and I have no intention of returning. Some places aren't meant to be explored. Some things are better left alone. Story 10, I'll never forget that night. It was late. One of those shifts where the hours drag on, the air feels heavy, and silence blankets the pod like an unwelcome visitor. I was the only officer in my section of the jail, overseeing about 70 inmates. The buzz of fluorescent lights hummed in the background, and the occasional cough or shuffle echoed down the rows of cells. I don't know what made me do it. Maybe it was boredom, or maybe it was the stories I'd heard from other officers over the years. Stories about strange noises, cold spots, and shadowy figures that seemed to move just outside the edge of your vision. Some called it nonsense. Others swore it was real. I'd always fallen somewhere in the middle, skeptical but curious. That night, curiosity got the better of me. I had cleared it with my boss earlier that week, half joking about bringing a spirit box to work. To my surprise, he just shrugged and said, "Do what you want, but don't let it distract you from your rounds." So there I was, sitting in the control station with a little device in my hand, its digital screen glowing faintly in the dim light. The spirit box is supposed to scan radio frequencies rapidly, allowing entities to communicate by manipulating the static. I wasn't sure I believed that, but as I held it, I felt a strange mix of anticipation and unease. I'd read enough about the jail's history to know it wasn't just the living who might be restless here. I pressed the power button, and the device crackled to life. Static filled the room, a low, constant hiss that seemed to amplify the quiet around me. For a moment, I hesitated. What if something actually answered? My rational side screamed at me to turn it off, but something deeper urged me on. "How many spirits are in here with me?" I asked, my voice steady, but my heart racing. The words felt strange in my mouth, like I was breaking some unspoken rule. The static shifted, warping and bending in a way that made the hairs on my arm stand up. Then, clear as day, a voice cut through the noise. "8. My breath caught in my throat. It wasn't garbled or faint. It was distinct, almost conversational. The voice was male, calm, and matter-of-fact. For a moment, I just stared at the device, my mind racing to rationalize what I'd just heard. Maybe it was a stray radio signal. Maybe I'd imagined it. But then I felt it. The air in the pod shifted, growing heavier, colder. It wasn't just the temperature. It was a weight, pressing down on me, making it hard to...
This is an ad by Regain Couples Therapy. Let's be honest. Loving your partner doesn't mean you always like them. And guess what? That's normal. Regain, powered by BetterHelp, offers couples therapy that's flexible, affordable, and 100% online. Whether you're reconnecting or working through conflict, Regain is here to support you both. See why people wish they'd tried couples therapy sooner. Visit regain.com/couplespod to get 10% off your first month. That's regain.com/couplespod.
Lowe's knows how to set off your July 4th with savings. Right now, buy one, get one free on select one coat coverage interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Plus, get two select 2 or 2.5 quart red, white, and blue annuals for just $10. Hurry, these July 4th deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, excludes Alaska and Hawaii. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for more details.
Breathe. The silence that followed the voice was deafening, the kind that makes you feel like you're not alone. "What is here?" I asked, my voice quieter this time. I wasn't sure I wanted an answer, but the question slipped out before I could stop myself. The static wavered again, and the same voice responded, this time with a single word. Sadness. A chill ran down my spine, and I couldn't shake the feeling that something was watching me. Not just from one direction, but from everywhere at once. The pod felt alive in a way that it never had before, like the walls themselves were holding their breath. I set the spirit box down, my hands trembling. The rational part of me screamed to turn it off, to put it away, and pretend this never happened. But I couldn't move. My eyes darted to the glass panel that overlooked the rows of cells. They were all locked. The inmates asleep were lying on their bunks. Nothing out of the ordinary, and yet I couldn't shake the feeling that I wasn't alone in that control station. Then came the footsteps. They were faint at first, a soft, deliberate rhythm echoing down the corridor outside the control station. I froze, my pulse pounding in my ears. It couldn't be an inmate. The doors were secure and I'd just finished my rounds. The steps grew louder, closer, until it sounded like whoever it was had stopped right outside the door. "Who's there?" I called out, my voice shaking despite my best efforts to sound authoritative. Silence, but not the kind that reassures you. This was the kind that makes your skin crawl, that fills your head with every worst-case scenario. I reached for my radio, my fingers fumbling over the buttons, but I didn't call for backup. What was I supposed to say? That a ghost had answered my questions and now there were phantom footsteps outside the door? Slowly I stood up and stepped toward the door, my boots feeling unnaturally loud against the tiled floor. I peered through the narrow window expecting to see an empty corridor, but I didn't. There was a shadow. It was faint, barely more than an outline, but it was there, standing motionless in the middle of the hall. It didn't move, didn't shift, but I could feel its presence like a weight on my chest. The spirit box crackled behind me, the static growing louder, more erratic, like it was reacting to whatever was out there. I blinked and the shadow was gone. Just like that. 1 second there, the next, nothing. But the feeling lingered, that oppressive, suffocating weight that told me I wasn't alone. I didn't touch the spirit box again that night. I turned it off, shoved it into my bag, and spent the rest of my shift trying to shake the unease that clung to me like a second skin. When morning came, I walked out of that jail with a sense of relief I hadn't felt in years. I've told a few people about that night, but most of them just laugh it off or give me a skeptical look. Maybe they're right. Maybe it was just my imagination, a coincidence, a trick of the light. But I've worked in that jail long enough to know what I felt, and I've heard enough stories from other officers to know I'm not the only one who's experienced something they can't explain. I never brought the spirit box back to work, and I never will. Some questions don't need answers, and some doors are better left closed. Thanks for watching. Don't leave before leaving a like to this video. Also hit the subscribe button to support my work. And as always, have a horrific nightmare, my dear.